I spent one whole day walking around Placentia. Is that how you pronounce it? Is that, it's in California. Have you heard of that place?
Is it Placentia?
Yeah.
I think I've heard them talk about it on the news. I don't know if I've been there.
Placentia. All right.
I don't know.
I spent one whole day walking around Placentia, California, enjoying myself immensely. There was a beauty.
Placentia. Sorry to interrupt. That sounds like a weird name for a place. Isn't that what's wrapped around a baby?
Yeah.
Born?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe there's a place named that.
All right. Well, this is part of the introduction, but I'm going to look it up now just because I'm curious.
Okay. Placentia, California. Sounds tasty.
I spent one whole day walking around Placentia, California, enjoying myself immensely. There was a beauty in the trash of the alleys which I'd never noticed before. My vision now seemed sharpened rather than impaired. As I walked along, it seemed to me that the flattened beer cans and papers and weeds and junk mail had been arranged by the wind into patterns. These patterns, when I scrutinized them, lay distributed so as to comprise a visual language. It resembled the trail signs which I understood American Indians used, and as I walked along, I felt the invisible presence of a great spirit which had gone before me, walked here, and moved the unwanted debris in these subtle, meaningful ways so as to spell out a greeting of comradeship to me, the smaller one who would follow. Hello and welcome, I'm Douglas Bowles, and this is 42 Minutes, and this is a midweek freestyle. You can find us online at 42minutes.com, and you can reach us at mail at 42minutes.com. You can follow our tweets at Sync42 and at Syncbook. For a while now, I've been thinking that we need to check in with California, L.A. in particular, and so tonight we're catching up with Michael Allen, projectionist and artist, multimedia artist, and we've talked to him a number of times in the past, but every time Coachella rolls around, I always feel the need to just check in and see what he's been up to and what he's doing. What have you been up to, Michael?
What's up? How's it going, man?
It's going good. It's Cinco de Mayo, too.
Cinco de Mayo. What's up, man? I don't know. I've been up to a lot. I've been working, doing my visuals, and still thinking a lot about synchronicity, you know?
Well, synchronicity is a weird thing, isn't it? Because it's so interesting. I reached out to you because it was probably the Monday after the first Coachella weekend, and that weekend, Sia was making a big buzz because she performed what amounts to more of a theater piece than what would, you know, be a rock show.
Mm-hmm.
And so that made me want to see if you were there again this year, if you did the silent disco, if you witnessed any music, you know, what you saw, what was good. But then since then, so much has happened that we're going to have to talk about. But so it's almost like the distant past now to say, oh, yeah, Coachella.
I know we started talking way back then, right before Coachella, and then I wasn't able to talk to you then at Coachella. And then I did another festival last weekend, which had me out in a field far, far away from signal. And, so a lot of time has passed since we started trying to work this out. But, that I saw the Sia show. It was awesome. Kind of masterpiece of a show. Like, they had a really big thing going on up there on their screen. And I guess at that time, what was the reasons? I guess it just came up because it was a cool show.
It was the thing that everyone was talking about on Monday, I think. From just a performance standpoint, it really split kind of the room where some people respect the artistry of what she's doing as a stage production.
Right.
But then other people were saying, oh, this isn't music. This is just backing tracks and singing. That's not music.
That was happening out there too. So the second week got a different response than the first week for one thing. So as far as the press goes and the response that I was seeing with the people that were there, people weren't nearly, they had talked to other people who had said enough to them about her not putting on that good of a show, that they were influenced by it instead of being all taken back like they were the first week. At least from my perspective, it seemed like there were a lot of people who were really excited about it the first week, And they were running into resistance from all these people that were saying, you know, this is bad. There were musicians that, which you always run into that. I see a lot with electronic music too, where my friends who are musicians are like, I don't really care about all the computer music because it's almost like it threatens their lifestyle. It threatens their way of life entirely.
For me,
but the kids aren't looking at it like that.
No, the kids aren't. I really have a high regard for any kind of music that pleases me. I don't know how, you know, I don't care how it's made, mm-hmm. but as far as a performance goes, I don't know that I understand electronic music as a performance art yet, though.
Right. Absolutely. Well, that's where my job comes in.
Yes, exactly.
To make a stage show, because these days in music, it's not as important for you to have your performance angle on. There are a lot of people, whether it's DJs who are staring at their laptops or shoegazers who are playing their instruments and just staring down at the floor the whole time. You're not seeing many people wear their sequence outfits and do their song and dance like they used to.
Speaking of the sequence outfits, though, so like the first week of Coachella, everyone talked about Sia, and then Prince died.
Yeah, first day of the second week.
Right.
Which, you know, Prince is one of my all-time favorites, so
mine
it kind of hit me real hard whenever I woke up to it, and then watching, I was in the right place for it because there's tributes going on all around, and everybody is doing their different ways of expressing it at the show.
Yeah. And that was my first question for you. Were you there in 2008 when he played Coachella and did Radiohead Creep?
Yeah, I was. I was there. And like I say, he's one of my favorites. And that same weekend, he was announced later. They had already had the whole bill announced, and Roger Waters was headlining that year, which is another favorite, of course. And so you got Roger Waters, Aphex Twin playing, and then they announced that Prince is playing on the, like, a month before the show. So, and then I was doing a really big visual production that year too, which was super cool because I was playing at this big festival that had some of my favorite acts of all time. Such a good year.
Yeah, 2008, I think.
Yeah, something like that, 7 or 8.
How many times do you think you've seen Prince?
I've seen Prince 4 or 5 times at least. I mean, that was the last time I saw him, of course. And when I was younger, I saw him 2 or 3 times in Dallas. One time I went and saw Prince by myself because I couldn't find anyone to go with me. And I really, really wanted to go see it.
Huh.
I think the tickets were expensive. And, you know, Prince goes in and out of popularity in a certain way. Like a lot of people like Prince. People love Prince, but a lot of people don't pay attention to him because he got so, like, abstract and weird in the 90s and on, you know?
Yeah. I've never disrespected his musicianship. At times I'm not as interested with the music that he's doing at any given moment, but definitely,
right.
I mean, I've always said, like, the greatest guitar solo ever, Let's Go Crazy. I mean,
man,
he's
that
just,
song itself is one of my favorites.
Yeah. Yeah.
He has, I mean, when I was a little kid, I remember hating that stuff whenever I was growing up, you know, conservative Texas, whatever, whoever I was at that time, when I was like in the 5th grade, couldn't stand Prince. My mom was into it. She made a deal with me to go, and I was I'm an only child, no father figure around. So I'm just this kid, and my mom says, I'll take you to see The NeverEnding Story if you'll go with me to see Purple Rain. I really wanted to go see NeverEnding Story. And so I was really into it. And she's like, okay, I'll go with you if you'll go with me. And I'm like, no, Mom, I don't want to go. And I remember being really anti-Prince and then seeing that movie and having my whole world flipped. And then that's whenever I started wanting to make stuff. And I feel like he influenced me in a way as a, like, however old you are, 10-year-old boy, like somebody would that is a like a peer, like a person that you know, even though it's just an artist that I went to a movie about from the 5th grade through high school. I was way into it. Not like I was trying to be like it, but the creative stuff that guy was doing influenced me to be creative in a whole lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would have been turned out the same if my mom wouldn't take me to see Purple Rain.
But then in the chronology here, then a few, I don't know how many days after Prince dies, then Beyonce drops this enormous new Beyonce thing, right? In her new...
I heard stuff about that, but I didn't hear it and haven't really...
Well, she...
I heard that she just now released a new record.
Yes, but she's doing things in her own way now. So this is what I'm realizing is that these gigantic artists, they need some kind of marketing strategy to suck all the oxygen out of the tank for a little bit so that they have the full view of all of pop culture on them for the moment. And so what Beyoncé did was she's calling it a visual album. So it's a movie that goes with each of the songs on the new album. And the movie was it was on HBO on someday in April, like April, a few days after Prince dies. I don't know.
Right.
But that was already planned out. And then the next day, the album drops on Tidal, and then a few days later it goes to all the normal outlets. But so it's just like this new marketing strategy where, so it's like a concept album. Mm-hmm. It's good stuff. She's doing good stuff. But it's amazing.
That kind of stuff is why I don't understand how there can't be an actual music television anymore. We have like access to MTV, the weird version of MTV that's not music, and we have plenty of YouTube MTV, that which it seems like it's kind of where it went. It's Vimeo and YouTube to get your music video fix. But when I was growing up, we had TV shows like Friday Night Videos, and there was a show called Night Flight in the 80s that was just showing music videos, you know? And I guess that MTV later on became so genre friendly where it was like, okay, here's your hip hop hour and here's your rock and roll hour and all that stuff, that it wasn't just like that the top 40, here's all the music that's cool these days, which influences people to buy the next version of what's cool. It kind of tells you what's cool through what everyone's getting into and stuff. We don't really have that. As far as I know, I mean, we have it through the internet, but it's so spread out that you don't pay attention to it. It's not like there's that big show that is showing off all the amazing projects that people do, because everybody's doing videos. It seems like the natural next step for people to get multimedia with it if they're not making money with their records, and they never will again.
Yeah.
So that part of time is kind of gone. Now you got to figure out different ways to merchandise it, and what better way than with multimedia.
Yeah,
you know, so now it's a lot harder for you to rip and pass around and trade videos than it is music. And especially if that video has a special package, a special container that it comes in. And it seems like they're using that as advertising, but they're also, it's another way to make money. Now their advertising can get them paid. Radiohead and their new video where they took everything off the internet.
That was my next step with this.
Release that. Yeah.
Yeah. And
yeah.
So
I mean, it all fits together. It seems like a common sign of the times, you know. And then
how do you get people's attention? What do you do to get everyone's attention?
Yeah. They should be getting that creative and then some, you know. There should be ways that we can use the internet and this new medium that we have to do new art. To do new things, you know, and that's what it seems like we should be able to do. That's what we do every day. That's what's happening here, is that it's all progressing and evolving and turning into new stuff. But it seems to me like, I just think that there's a bigger market for music television than is being harnessed. Why don't we have did you ever have that channel, The Box?
No.
The Box in Texas on cable, we had this channel where it was just videos all the time. It's probably in the late 80s. I remember watching a bunch of NWA on it because people would call and request the music, and then that music would play. And so you'd see the same videos over and over because the hit song that was happening right then was the one that everyone was calling for. So they'd play it was just like constantly, you would see it across the bottom of the screen is always scrolling the phone number to call. And the numbers that you dial in to request the music. So it's like this video jukebox. And with the internet being here, it seems like if you were to get people into it like that, there are so many people making music videos. All the independent stuff that happens in people's bedrooms these days is better than what big companies were making in the 80s and 90s. You know, there's like all these new tools for you to do this. And the kids are creative. The people that are growing up with it, you know, someone like me who's in his early 40s, I'm 42 years old, and I grew up with a different form and have watched that change. And so it's always a process of adaptation for me, more so than the people who were born in the 90s who grew up with this. Instead of switching from tape to video, They grew up with video. Instead of switching from film to video, they grew up with video. Or instead of switching from tape to digital, they grew up with digital. And through that, I would think that they'd be coming up with, like, better ways to do it, which they are. So there's new things happening, and through these new things, we should see new things, you know? Breakthroughs in technology as far as what they can show us and how they show us and all that stuff.
So what do you think of the new Radiohead song? Have you heard it?
Well, I mean, yeah, I heard it. I like Radiohead a whole lot. I'm not as diehard of a fan as a lot of my friends who get so excited because Radiohead, it sounds like Radiohead, you know? I like it. I can't rag on it. It just sounds like Radiohead. It sounds just like all the other Radiohead to me. But I love them. You know, they're really cool. I think the video is cool. I like the burning man at the end of it. It speaks to the burner in me.
The burner in you. And you went last year and performed?
Yeah.
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 And you're going again this year?
To what?
To
where? Are you talking about Coachella?
Burning Man.
Oh, to Burning Man. Yeah. I go every year. I've been out there for like the past 10 years.
Yeah.
But by saying perform, it's like I take a bunch of equipment.
Yes.
And we build stuff and we set stuff up and we do stuff all week. But everyone out there is kind of performing. So yeah, I go out there, but it's not like, and I've been like brought on to crews where they're like, okay, you're a video guy. And last year, that's what it was. I was working for a camp that was a bunch of rich people who set up a real big lavish camp. And I set up visuals and did a couple nights over there where we just filled the whole place up with screens. And it was like a job.
Yeah.
But as far as Burning Man goes, that's kind of not the way to do it. It's a lot more fun if your job is you doing what you do. And but it's all changing. There's a lot of people that go out there.
I guess that's the line that you always have to balance, because most of the time I think you probably are working at these great festivals, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, you did the Silent Disco 2 years running now. What did you see this year at Coachella? What did you catch this year that was good?
Well, I mean, this year, to be honest, there was nothing there that was like the kind of stuff that I was talking to you about. To me, this wasn't that year when Prince played, man. There wasn't a whole lot going on that got me really excited. Guns N' Roses was great, but it was real slow considering that Axl was sitting down the whole time. So I watched 3 or 4 songs and was over it because it just felt like they were rehashing something. They were like old dudes redoing something. If you would have been able to stand up, it would have been a whole different ballgame.
Was it because...
way more exciting.
Because he was ill?
He hurt himself, but he'd been sitting down for 3 weeks, which makes me feel like there's something more to it than that, because I've never been to a concert where the front guy had to sit down the whole time, except for that one. I've been to thousands of concerts over time, and I'm sure there have been plenty of injured people playing in bands. But whatever happened to him, it put him down so that he had a chair out and he sat on it through the whole thing.
Weird.
So it was old Axl doing old Axl dance, sitting
on
down
a chair.
In the chair.
His sideways snake dance thing?
Yeah, full on. Sideways snake dancing, sitting down. Come on. So that was kind of, I can't say it was a letdown because I didn't really expect too much more. I had already got seeing that that's how it was the week before that, because I only went the second week. So NWA was awesome. It was Ice Cube, and then he brought out some of the other members of NWA. That was super, super cool, because I never thought I was going to get to see that, and I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
There was some good DJ stuff that kind of felt like it was touching on a new style of music to me. I always love it about Coachella, because sometimes when you hear the stuff you never heard of, then you'll hear something that seems like it might indicate that music's changing and maybe next year we'll have something that we didn't expect, you know, something that we've never heard before.
Hmm. It seems like, so we're definitely touching on LA, things that say LA to me, like Guns N' Roses, LA band, NWA.
Yeah. But I was in Texas when I was loving all that. I was in 8th grade.
Yeah.
Jamming some Guns N' Roses and jamming some NWA, and that's what made that show really cool, seeing those bands. The screen that they used on the main stage was outrageous too. So they were using these insane mega screens that were like, I couldn't tell you exactly how big they were, but it seemed like they were like 100 feet tall by 100 feet wide, whatever the biggest video screens you can imagine on both sides of the stage.
Well, is the main stage at Coachella just a big flat field?
Yeah, it is. There's a massive field with a massive, gigantic stage at the front of it, and that's right next to another massive field with a massive stage on it. And the two fields have art in between them, kind of, and areas in between the two, but you can even hear the music from both stages while they're playing.
Yeah.
So sometimes the music, like on one stage, you got to stand right in front of it for it to drown out the music from the other stage. And then there are several other stages that are out of that. But up in the front, there are two main stages.
But it's all general admission, right?
Yeah, but there's a lot of VIP action. So like, as far as where you stand at to see the show up in the front, then it is general admission. But there are people that have VIP access to areas that are up on the sides of the stage and closer to the stage, that is the money guys.
Sure.
So that pay as much for tickets.
Say you're Taylor Swift and you want to see your boyfriend performing,
yeah.
You get to be
yeah.
in front.
There are places for all of those people, because with it being LA, I'm sure that there are a lot of them.
Yeah.
You know, so there are a lot of the people that aren't going to just go for general admission to see some of these acts. And also some of the bands don't want anyone backstage. So sometimes I've heard stories of them just clearing out everybody from the stage and everyone from backstage area to do their show. And it seems like that's the only place you could stand at some of these things. If you were those rock stars that are trying to go and see the concert, you'd have to be backstage.
Hmm.
But not always. Sometimes they force everyone to get off the stage, and I'm sure they got pins that those people go and play in.
Pins?
Just like a pin, like the beer garden pin where you're pinned up in a little area.
Yeah. Okay, well, so that's our Coachella 2016 report.
So I guess whenever you called, something that I've wanted to catch up with you too. I've been wanting to talk to you all about, because did you read the front page of my website, perhaps, where I'm talking about Synchrodelia?
No. Tell me.
I made this site that's project-ions.com, and it started out as a portfolio site. But then while I was building it, trying to do something creative, I started taking a bunch of journal entries and different notes that I'd taken over time. So I pulled out several of my old journals and a whole lot of just stuff where I'd like write down paragraphs out of books that I was reading, or at certain points I was writing and taking notes from the stuff I was writing, or even some of the little short story kind of stuff that I would be writing on. I'd copied this onto the site, and the site was getting deeper and deeper with pictures and videos, so that I saw, well, I got like 100 or over 200 pages on this site at that point. And I decided to make it so that you could bounce between these different pages by just clicking on little white dots that are just all over the pages, right? So when you're scrolling around, there are unmarked links that are just a dot. If you click on that dot, then it'll randomly take you to the next page. And you'll get like 7 or 10 of those dots per page. So it kind of makes it so that when you're navigating through it, anyone's going to have a different experience, because you're going to click on different dots unless you're just going with the stuff that's labeled. And then on each one of the pages, at the bottom of the page, I made like a paragraph or two or three paragraphs that were from these journals that don't really relate to each other. The entries that I'm putting down there are just the things that I pulled from one page or from one section of the journal. But then the goal with it in my mind was for people to randomly navigate through the site, and then while they're navigating, for them to read the paragraphs. And if you are on the right wavelength, then maybe you'll get something that means something out of your pathway. So you're going to click on three different links that nobody else would have clicked on, and your three pages are going to say stuff that it only says on that page. And so your chain of events is going to give you your experience, right? So it's kind of like if you get on that wave, then maybe you'd be able to take these random journal entries and relate them to one another so that it says something specific to you.
Huh.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like you're depending on it's like shuffling the cards, and then you pick the top three cards, and there's something that these top three cards say on them. And then if you can key in on it right, and you can like get your focus in order, then maybe you can harmonize reality so that these three cards mean something together. Kind of like interpreting a dream. Kind of like interpreting something that's really random and then taking that and making something meaningful out of it, even though it's completely random. And I believe that if whenever I started doing that, I started thinking about the concept, and I had seen something or read something that was about that book Flow, and in Flow they use the term autodelic. And autodelic is when people create something for the sake of creating it. So whenever someone is creating an autodelic art piece, then they're not being motivated by the money that they're going to get and the rewards that they're going to get. They're being motivated by the act of doing it so that they can get better at doing what they're doing. So I saw that in a thing that was about Van Gogh, and it was saying that Van Gogh had been painting his whole life and nobody saw his art except for his brother. And if you went back and you tried to figure out why he was doing it, then you can see at the end of his life that he had enough practice at what he was doing in order to be a master and in order to mix colors like nobody else could, because he'd been practicing all that time on his own. Well, his goal wasn't being like, it wasn't to make money, obviously, because he wasn't making it when he was broke. It wasn't to get attention, because he was only showing it to his brother. You know, something else was driving him, and they explained it in that book Flow as something that's considered, that their word that they made up for it is autodelic. So that got me thinking about a lot of the stuff that I do, which has come from that same angle as the website I was describing, where I'm trying to make something that's just based on a pick of the draw. Like a lot of the time, the stuff that I was talking about earlier when I said I get excited by the way that the music goes with the video, and we talked about that when I talked to you before, where I really, it feels real inspiring to me whenever I see the two components of something that weren't meant to go together seem like they go together. It makes me feel really like I want to do it again. I want to figure out where that came from. And it happens all the time. And the more that I'm aware of it, the more I'm conscious of it, the more it happens. Well, I feel like if I had a word for that, then it's something that a lot of artists do. If I had a way of describing that, which we don't talk about it like that because it comes into this like weird mystical territory. So now the thing that I'm saying is something where I'm trying to magically drop two things in order that weren't supposed to be in order. But I think that that magic that happens is real common. It's something that we all do. It's something that a lot of the time abstract artists, especially, they'll make stuff that's real abstract and they'll leave it to the observer to figure out where it's coming from. And they depend on just the universe to show them something. And then whenever they find it, then they're like, oh, it worked. Well, I feel like if us people would recognize that concept as being real, which a lot of us do, especially in this community, then we'd be able to talk about it. And then if we could talk about it, then we could refine it. And if we could refine it, then we could get better at it. So if we got better at doing our art that way, then we could get better at living our life that way. Because if we can get better at it, we can get better at it by working on it, by studying it, by practicing, you know. And sometimes I feel like most people don't get a chance to practice because the concept seems so far out that it's dismissed before you even get a chance to work on something.
Right. And that's where I would like to play the devil's advocate. What is there's the scientific thing where our brain is a pattern-making machine, and so it's called something when you connect dots that aren't necessarily there because your brain wants a pattern out of something. Do you know what is that called? What is it?
I know that
what is that called?
It's
not quadriphenia, but it's something like that.
Well, there's that word. It's word that
Joel, I think apophenia? So. Yeah, that's it. Apophenia.
Yeah. Which, that's the thing, is as a result of this confusing reality that
we're
in.
Well, you can dismiss anything with this left brain, you know, paradigm of, you know. But what we're getting at here, so you're just saying, oh, synchronicity is at the heart of my artwork. But what we're finding is synchronicity is at the heart of life. Like, that's the fundamental force of the universe. It's like things making connections and meanings between things, and how that changes a life is kind of, it's always the artist's story. Oh, I was in this bookstore, and then the book that changed my life just happened to fall into my lap.
Right.
Right.
It's totally, I mean, that's something that
Oh, I just happened to
still
go
there
see
in that
Purple
moment.
Rain on that one day when I wanted to see Neverending Story, and that kind of put me on this whole career path of creation. And then you were talking
Totally.
about, oh, you were talking about something, and I was imagining, oh, Van Gogh's, all these paintings that no one ever saw except his brother. What about all the albums that Prince has in his vault that we all know that are in there? Like,
Right?
I
I
think
didn't even
I.
think of, I didn't put those two together, but absolutely it's the same thing, except for Prince was doing his mainstream stuff at the same time that he was doing his own personal stuff.
I think I heard a news story that there's a new Prince album for the next like 50 years. They have enough.
I heard that
Do
too. Everyone's forwarding around
you
a
think
hoax,
that's
though.
bogus? Yeah, because then
There's
I
another
also.
one that has been proven as bogus, and when you really look at the details on it, it has a bunch of detailed descriptions of the stuff that they've recovered from the vault, and it's like stuff where he like it's Prince with Soul Asylum or some shit like that, where it's like, nuh-uh. And then whenever you read it, there's a whole bunch of it, and then people are forwarding it around like it's a real deal. But then finally, I saw someone pull out the Snopes. This is denial. This is
Right.
not real. So,
I need to get
who
Snopes
knows?
on the show. Who's Snoping the Snopes? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, right.
They're the lizard people,
For
right? The Snopes.
real. Yeah, I mean, I think that they're, I mean, we're always growing as a people. It's crazy because whenever you're talking about stuff like, excuse me, if you're saying something that is, that you're discovering something that's new, then it's kind of a crazy thing to try to propose, considering that people have been working on it for thousands of years now. So who is somebody at this point to come up with anything that anyone hadn't figured out yet? So if we're sitting here talking about it, like, oh, my idea about the way synchronicity works, field cough. Polo-filled cough has had me for the past 2 weeks. That's another thing about Coachella. You're standing in a polo field, and I don't know what you're breathing in, but you breathe it in for a few days, and you can feel it in your chest.
Is it all the pollen?
I think there are a lot of people stomping up a lot of dust. Whenever you're
Oh.
standing in that space, there are people that are just like the ground is shaking around, and you just sit there and breathe it all in. And after a few days of that, your body's like, "What the hell?"
Yeah, I
I
gotcha.
think I've seen other people that have asthma who have been seriously affected by it. It sent a guy to the hospital this year that was working with us. For me, I generally don't have a cough, and I don't think I'm coming down with anything that has me coughing. But it seems like there's something that happened from me standing out there in that environment for 6 days.
Maybe you'll have to,
I'm getting better,
the
though.
surgical masks.
That too, I know.
Blinged out Coachella surgical masks, right?
Yeah, some sort of gas mask or
But what about
whatever it is.
you don't get that in the desert with all the blowing wind and sand?
Oh, I mean, last year I think I damaged myself from the sand too. And I just kind of ignore it. I've always been of the thought that I'm making myself sick if I get sick, and that I can somehow just think myself better and it will work. And
Yes.
it was working for years and years. I did
Yeah.
that for 12,
Oh, now you're
14 years. I
42.
was totally,
Yeah.
well, I wasn't sick for the past 10, at least 10 years. Any sickness was really mild. Haven't been to the hospital since I moved to LA in 2001. I was like golden. And then after Burning Man this year, I started getting sick. And whenever I was getting sick, I was like, no, I got a flu. It can't be so bad. And I was touring with a band, and we were doing flight dates so that we would be at home for 3 or 4 days, and then we'd fly to like Canada and do two, three shows around Canada and fly back to LA for 2 days and then fly back out and do a show in up north or show wherever. And while that was going on, I was taking Dayquil all week to feel better and then go and do these shows and then come home and sleep for the weekend and go back out and do the shows, and getting more and more ill as this went on, until in the end, I was sincerely very, very, very sick and ended up having to go to the hospital. And whenever I ended up at the hospital, they're like, I tell them, I went to Burning Man, and then went to this bachelor party. We've been touring for the past month. I hadn't felt good, and it's been getting worse and worse. Doctor's like, that's the worst story I've ever heard in my life. You have strep, and the strep is in your blood, and it's septic now, and we're going to have to admit you in the hospital to keep you alive.
Oh, no.
So I ended up in the hospital for a week, and that has had me on this other side of everything. Before that happened, other people would tell me how to be healthy, and I'd be like, speak for yourself, I feel good. So, like, I really felt like, and this thing has made me feel like the universe or whatever is trying to get me to be a little more humble, because I would get real cocky about it and act like I'm in charge of reality and I make myself sicker, I make myself better, and so do you. So whenever I tell that to someone that's sick, they'd get defensive, like straight up mad at me. Don't talk to me like that, because I'm sick because the universe has me this way. And I'm like, whatever, you just hadn't figured out what I figured out. So I'm laying there in the hospital. 1 minute is praying, please, God, let me die. And then the next minute, oh, my God, I'm dying. Please don't let me die. I'm dying. I was jacked up, man. And so since then, I've had to reevaluate reality. And that's one of the things that makes me feel like it was a system of belief that was carrying me around, that is carrying me around. And I didn't have enough faith in myself and what I was trying to accomplish. And I don't know if I would be having quite the same outlook if I wouldn't have got so sick last year. Because I was kind of getting real cocky about stuff for a while. And this has really earthed me. And I don't know if it's 42 or if it's like...
Oh, did you hear? I mean, so like one of the things that we were saying early on, we've been playing this game with the year number 2013, mm-hmm. 2014, 2015, in terms of the tarot cards, and the 16th mm-hmm. is the tower card, the God struck tower.
I saw that.
Yeah, and so it seems like this year, and this is, you know, you can take this however you want, but I mean, it could be all crazy, but I'm seeing a lot of people, you know, like their foundation's just coming apart. You know, it's like they mm-hmm. have to it's like that after the tower comes down, then you can see the star of hope, and then you can find your way out of the underworld. And,
absolutely.
You know, then you come back.
Absolutely. You have to go through it in order to be able to find all that stuff. And if you don't go through the collapse, then you'll never work it out.
It's interesting because you don't know anything about the Beyoncé album, but basically it has turned her life into this movie, this narrative of, did Jay-Z cheat on her? And so you don't, the album flirts with the whole idea, but you know, that's what she's singing about, her suffering, her pain. Jay-Z is a bad husband. He's a bad father. And then the last song is this redemptive song. It's going to work out. It's like the end of the movie and the credits roll. And you're like, you feel good. Jay-Z's not a bad guy. It's going to work out. And it's like, I feel so manipulated. This isn't real.
Yeah, that's what it makes me feel like.
Like, they're using their celebrity to create all this noise about... It's still just a story. They're selling the story, even...
I worked at a club whenever she released a record that had Put a Ring on It and stuff.
Yeah.
And they did this industry listening party at the club. And I was the AV guy, so I was triggering the songs, and they were everyone the record label guys that are coming in hearing their first shot of the Beyoncé record are all sitting in there, and her dad is talking to people. So it was her dad that was doing the presentation. And at one point he said, we looked at all of Beyoncé's top hits and we analyzed them to see why they sold so many millions of records. And what we found out was that the ones that sold the most were the most repetitive. So if she says it 50 times instead of 20 times, then it's going to sell more. And he said that to us, like out loud, they said that, which to me is like, oh God, I hate it. You're like saying the algorithm out loud. And now that you did it, whenever I hear it being played with, then I feel like I'm being manipulated. You know, like now that I heard the guy, I heard it from the horse's mouth, it makes me feel that way. And then when you told me that story, it seems like just another marketing technique where they're like, all right, TMZ has been really wanting to hear that you guys are breaking up and you're still together. So let's make a bunch of money, because now Jay-Z's got a response record. I heard that earlier today.
Oh, interesting. Right.
Jay-Z's putting something out that's going to be his side of the story.
Well, because there was the one moment in the elevator like this where there's this video of her Beyonce's sister taking a swing at Jay-Z. And so this is like little leaked moment where, and Beyonce is just completely composed, right? Like, and so it's like, are these real people or are they characters? Are they playing this role to create? And then, so all the people on the Beyonce record are on the title, their title roster artists. You know, it's like Jack White does a song with Beyonce. It's great. It's like they're doing good work. But I feel manipulated is the thing.
Right. But then there's that thing that you said, the elevator right there. Did you read the thread? There was what, Prince in the elevator?
No, I didn't.
Well, did you see the guy that was saying there was, at one point, there was something that was up on one of the sites that was someone who knew him, who had done an interview like the day he died, and they were saying he was like a producer or someone, where Prince would give him like details about what songs were about and stuff, and he was real close with him. They knew each other. And at one point Prince said, you know what the elevator is, right? The elevator is the devil. And so this guy is like halfway in tears explaining that Prince had told him that the elevator was the devil, and then he was found dead in an elevator.
Right.
Which is pretty awesome, because then whenever you talk about that elevator thing, then it ties it together in a way where maybe we're looking at some sort of, maybe we're the ones that are analyzing the script. Maybe the script is meant to just be observed and we're sitting here talking about it. You know, maybe we have access to so many different perspectives on these events that are happening that we're able to somehow see and experience things where we're, I don't know, observing the archetype. We're like watching the thing that makes it like that, so that whenever I think about
in the spectrum of things, like the Greek gods, the pantheon of gods, these are the
but
gods.
We would do the same thing though. So we could, if we set ourselves off on a tangent that just had to do with you and me, instead of talking about the big celebrities, the big stars, and then we started like making these observations regarding something that you said or that I said, and then we start experiencing this stuff, that would seem to me like it has to do with, it's real personal, as you know how personal that idea is. It means something different to everybody, and something specific to me isn't the same thing to you. But whenever I'm analyzing it that way and I'm thinking about stuff, sometimes it feels like I'm looking behind the curtain. Sometimes it feels like there's those building blocks that are happening are present, but we just don't talk about it because it seems like we're out of bounds, maybe. Because, I don't know, I don't believe that the elevator is the devil, and I don't believe that Prince somehow like imprinted it with any sort of a special power as an elevator. But I think that the coincidences lined up because of the just the timing, all of the stuff that we're all looking at, you know? Because right now, whenever you say that about the elevator and Beyonce, then I bring it back to it because I started thinking about like, okay, sometimes I try to figure out, you know how in stories, for instance, all the, like they have the same characters over and over, the archetype characters, and you can break apart the story and somehow say like, here's the Luke Skywalker in every story, here's right. The Princess Leia and
sure.
All the stories. And whenever I look at that, I feel like there's a pattern that's happening that has something to do with just our observations. It's not like, I think that Carl Jung would say that there's the certain 20 archetypes or something, and that we're just somehow each one of them come back to that one. I think I might be wrong on that, but I think that it had something to do with just like that. Those are the basic building blocks. These archetypes are almost like the the chart of elements of psychology.
Yeah.
So all the elements that make up everything, these archetypes make up the things that we're experiencing and that we're living.
The soap opera is the same.
It's
the same soap opera for everyone. It's just different rooms.
Right. But sometimes I think that it has everything to do with what we're seeing and what we're believing. So it's not so much, it would be different from one person to the other. It's not so much a general thing with the same Zeus archetype that has been present with in so many stories is coming at it just because you need that lightning bolt wielding God. It's present because the person who's looking at it and talking about it is looking for it. And then whenever they look for it, not only are they observing it because it's just there, but it becomes there more often because they're observing it.
Hmm.
So like maybe
Heisenberg principle.
I mean, yeah. And well, that too, but then it's so hard to talk about. That's why I was saying that about needing a language for it.
Synchrodelic.
Yeah.
Synchrodelic.
The synchrodelic, whenever I was saying synchrodelic, that to me meant like creatively just depending on synchronicity for your end piece. And we do it all the time with just living, but a lot of, you know, that's like tarot is a synchrodelic art because it just depends on the way the cards fall. And
that's life.
That's everything. Yeah, that's what we do every day of our lives. But some people would be like, oh, the stars are what make it that way. And so we're following the directions of the stars and we're following the directions of the outside forces that are making us live this, which I can't deny that because at another point in my reality, it felt like it was all a reflection. It was like there is no controlling it because all you're doing is looking at it and it's bouncing back and forth, creating this feedback. But right now at this particular time, after having a year where I had these experiences, which is not like it's not like this year is the first time I've had sicknesses or letdowns or whatever else has me on this just path of trying to be real and trying to gather in what I need to get. For a long time, I said out loud, I don't care how science fiction it is, I'm in it. So I might be thinking something that from the outsider's perspective would be completely nonsense. I'll take that nonsense and roll with it because it makes me feel better than what it feels like to accept what's established. Well, whenever I had to deal with reality for a second, then I'm like, okay, let's be real so that I don't look like an idiot to the people that I'm talking to, you know? So if I'm saying these things and someone is hearing me say it, then they might be thinking, oh, this guy's so far out. He's like disconnected from reality because he's so confident that it's a way that it's really not, you know? And then I'm like, well, I'm going to go with it the way it's really not, because the more I do that, the more likely it is to become that way. And I'd rather it be that way than the way it is, where we've explained it all scientifically and these mysteries are meaningless because they're just figments of my imagination. And I don't, like, I'm still, it doesn't matter how sick I get, I'm going to feel like there's something to be learned from it. There's a harmony that's present, and that duality, that yin and yang about it, that all everything just isness about it, is something that we're still learning about. We're still babies when it comes to our understanding of that culturally, socially, all of us people all over the planet. But maybe that's where the lizard people come in, because maybe they haven't figured out.
Well, that was 42 minutes. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you for calling me.
You bet. You've been listening to Michael Allen on 42 Minutes, production of Syncbook Radio and syncbook.com. Be sure to check out his website at project-ions.com. Is there a dash in there? Is that right?
Yeah. Projections with a dash.
Yeah. Projection. Yeah.
Projections with a dash. Project-ions.com.
For more information about the Syncbook, our guests, check out past shows, or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website at thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast and would like more, consider becoming a Syncbook Plus member. Some of the membership benefits include full access to the complete audio archive, discounts on books, behind-the-scenes scripts, bonus audio and video, as well as monthly online hangouts with the hosts. All this and more can be found at thesyncbook.com/membership. Thanks so much. And if the elevator tries to break you down...
Go crazy.
Punch a higher floor.
Punch a higher floor. Yeah.
We found the truth beneath your lies. True love never has to hide.
True love never has to hide.
I trade your broken wings for mine.
Trade your broken wings for mine.
I've seen your scars and kissed your crime.
Seen your scars and kissed your crime.
So many people that I know, they just trying to touch you. Kiss up and rub up and fill up. Kiss up and rub up and fill up on you. Give you some time to prove that I can trust you. Again, I'm gonna kiss up and rub up and fill up. Kiss up and rub up and fill up on you all night.
Oh,
together, I'll remember sweet love all night.